What made you change the game, Josh?
Last night, the Doomslayer came down from planet Mars and told me if I don't talk about Doom 2016, he'd glory kill me for health.
Yeah, well, let's keep this glory killing stuff to ourselves, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
I got a cat.
Meow. Meow.
No, for real, I got a cat yesterday.
Oh!
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, it's Mary and I got our first cat yesterday.
Nice.
Yeah.
What kind of cat is it?
I don't know cat breeds that well, but it's a little, like, silvery gray cat, and her name is Cersei.
Oh, shame.
Not shame. A shame. Named after one of the only true inspiring female characters on Game of Thrones.
That's well.
Because the one that we thought was the inspiring female character ended up being the worst person ever.
That is true. Like father, like daughter, right?
I guess. Especially, if you're going to tell me like father, like daughter in like the last three episodes.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because that's all that matters.
Got to wrap this up.
In the year 2016, Tom,
mm-hmm.
back long, long, long ago.
It feels like it.
I was sitting there watching the Game Awards and Overwatch won Game of the Year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But was Overwatch really the best first-person shooter of 2016?
Well, Overwatch isn't strictly a first-person shooter, but I know what you're getting at.
But it is a first-person shooter.
Well, mechanically, yes, but it's not strictly that in the same way that I know what you're getting at. I'm just being that guy.
I'm just going to say, did Overwatch have one of the coolest soundtracks ever?
I mean, it's got a pretty good soundtrack.
But could it have been better?
You mean, could it have been... nothing but tracks and tracks of sick metal licks that play out anytime you have to face a swarm of enemies?
Yeah.
I mean, I guess if they tried harder, it could have been.
It could have been. Well, welcome to A Cast of the Past, where best friends get together to talk about old games in a new light. I'm Josh.
And I'm Tom.
And we are talking about Doom 2016 today.
Yes, we are. Pushing the very boundaries of this show's unwritten rule that a game has to be at least 3 years old to be covered, and it is past that mark, and with a sequel coming in, and with this being one of Josh's favoritest games ever, we just had to talk about it.
Yeah, we talked about this during the Games of the Decade, mm-hmm. in honorable mentions and stuff, where you mentioned about Tomb Raider being one of the best reboots of a franchise, and I came back really quick saying... Doom 2016 is probably one of the best reboots of a franchise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was incredibly well received, so a lot of people agree with you.
I played Doom 2016 on the PlayStation 4, where I platinumed it, on the Xbox One, where I almost 100%ed it, and on the Nintendo Switch just recently.
Where?
And man, well, we'll talk about it.
Okay, sounds good. I played it on the Xbox One for the first time, and this was the first Doom game I've ever played.
So, that was going to be one of my first questions I asked you, Tom. What was your experience with Doom, or what was your knowledge on Doom?
Well, how about we glory kill the nitty gritty, and then we get into it.
But let's go back quick to the year 2016.
Okay, yeah, we have to make sure we're ready. We have to make sure we're ready for this.
Some things in the year 2016 happened.
Mm-hmm.
Some would say.
Yes. It was quite an eventful year.
In the year 2016, the National Toy Hall of Fame inducted what toy into its Hall of Fame?
Ooh. So it was just one toy? It wasn't like a class of toys?
There was three of them, but there was one particular.
Can you give me a hint at what era this toy was from?
I would probably say the 70s and 80s.
All right, so not Slinky.
Nope. I'll give you a hint. It's not a toy.
Interesting. Is it a board game?
Close. The answer is Dungeons and Dragons.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Was inducted into the Toy Hall of Fame in 2016.
Mm. Mm. I can't believe it took that long.
And the biggest movie of 2016.
Oh, okay. I should be able to get this. Let me see. I should be able to get this, but hang on.
So, I'll give you a hint. It's not Suicide Squad.
I am so glad that it's not. Yeah.
The Oscar award-winning Suicide Squad.
It was Captain America: Civil War.
Number one movie of 2016 was Star Wars: Rogue One.
Oh, I forgot that came out that year. Yes. Yes, a Star War was the highest grossing thing. That makes complete sense. I am a fool.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you think about the top three movies was Rogue One, Finding Dory, and then Civil War.
So really, the highest grossing movie of 2016 was Disney.
Yeah. Zootopia was number six. Jungle Book was in there.
Ugh, Zootopia.
Hey, that's a good movie.
It's a good movie. Not good enough to...
Shakira's in it, and she dressed up like the gazelle during the Super Bowl
she did.
Halftime show.
She did. Okay, you're right. You're winning me over. Okay, fine.
But, Doom, Tom,
What
is your history with D-O-O-M?
My history is, this is one of the many things my parents told me, no. Get away from that.
Okay.
So yeah, was not allowed to play Doom, like many games of its ilk, but I was aware of its reputation as I got older. I think the first time that Doom was really on my radar was when Doom 3 came out, which I believe was in 2004 or 5. And the only reason I'm aware of it is because a lot of people were very mad about it. They did not like Doom 3, and they were like, nope, I don't want this. And then that's it. I know, depressingly, that the Columbine shooters liked the game a lot, and that's about it. And then when Doom 16 came out, it was the cat's pajamas all over the place. And this is the first time I've played any Doom property. How about you, Josh? I know, I imagine, given how excited you were when this came out, this probably was something that tapped into a long-held fandom for you, yeah?
Yeah, so I played... Well, let's start back at Little Baby Josh.
Okay.
Where... I was at my grandma's house, and she allowed me to play Wolfenstein, and I was like, this game's awesome.
Mm.
And they're like, oh, you like this game? Play this. And it was Doom. And I was like, whoa. It was like the boo, 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 boo. The shooting stars meme going through my head as I was playing Doom.
I imagine little you in a diaper with a full-grown beard going, whoa.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just like the camera shooting through my eyes, and it's just space.
Yeah.
So I played that on the PC, yes. A long time ago, I played games on the PC.
Well, you've grown up. You've become a smart, intelligent adult.
That's right. I grew up, and then I bought it for the 32X, okay? And then I played it on the Super Nintendo as well.
I didn't know anybody. I've never met anyone who owned a 32X, and I can't believe I didn't know this about you until right now.
Star Wars Arcade was amazing on the 32X, okay? Aerosmith Revolution X, is it an upcoming episode of Jaeger's Retro Review? We'll find out.
Wink, 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 wink.
But, yeah, so I played Doom on the 32X, on the Super Nintendo, on the Sega Saturn, on the PlayStation 1. I played Doom 3 on the Xbox. And I've downloaded Doom so many times on my phone or on tablets or everywhere. I just recently downloaded Doom 1 and 2 and Final Doom on the Switch because I forgot how great Doom was. Like the old Doom. Like, we'll talk about Doom 2016, but I forgot about how great old Doom was. Where I sat down and I played the first Doom and I beat it in like an hour and a half. Like, I went through every single level, just boom, 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 done. I was like, man, it's like muscle memory for me.
Nice, nice.
But, yeah, I forgot how much I loved the Doom franchise. Doom 3 was, it was a stumble. Oh, and don't forget, like, Doom 64 came out. It was all right.
So can you explain to me what makes Doom 64 different?
It was just graphically smoother. It's like when people are like, oh, it's at 60 frames per second, bro, like compared to like 30 frames per second. Mm-hmm. It was just smoother, cleaner. There was more levels to it and Yeah. All I remember, though, of playing it was the game was very dark. Like, you had to turn the brightness up on your TV really bad because of how dark it was. One of the few games for the N64 that I actually liked.
That is saying something.
It is. But Doom 64 will be coming out as a pre-order bonus for Doom Eternal. So get to jump back into it in full, like, up-res a little bit. Make it look cleaner. Maybe brighter. But, yeah, Doom 3, I think the best thing about Doom 3 was the engine that it was ran on gave us a lot of good stuff afterwards.
Okay.
It took a lot of the quick run-and-gun type movement of Doom and made it more just survival horror instead.
Oh, so that's very different. If this Doom is a back-to-basics, which I assume it is, survival horror seems incredibly different.
Yeah, so imagine, like, playing, let's say, Resident Evil, you know, 1 through Code Veronica, and having an idea of how this franchise should be, and then all of a sudden they release Resident Evil 4, and it just, you know, spits in the face of the entire franchise that came before it. This is pretty much what Doom 3 was.
So you're telling me Doom 3 is a masterpiece that reinvents the gaming genre of its time, and I should play it right
Some
away.
Some people might think that, but those people would probably be wrong. Yeah.
Noted. Okay.
Okay.
So I want to ask you a few questions still.
Yeah.
So Doom 2016, is this fair to call this a straight up reboot, or is this one of those reinventions that is part sequel, part reintroduction, you know, kind of like Mortal Kombat 9? Well, how would you label this?
I would do it as a sequel reboot.
A sequel boot?
Yeah, because
a requel
when you go to hell and you're listening to the audio logs from the demons themselves.
Yes. Yes.
Right. They talk about the Doom Slayer, and they talk about the Titan that came through, and that at the end of it, they ambushed him and put him inside of the tomb and stuff along those lines.
Mm hmm.
When you beat Doom 2, you go up against a giant titan at the end, and you get warped to a zone that's filled with, you're overwhelmed with enemies, to the point where your character dies in the game, and that's how it ends.
Okay. Okay.
So as you can kind of see, like, it fills in the gap there. It kind of, like, completely avoids Doom 3. Now, there's some lore stuff that does mix in with Doom 3, with the Mars colony and stuff like that, but it's pretty much right after, like, you know, it takes place, I guess, generations, I would say, after Doom 2.
Okay. See,
and I know that's what Doom Eternal's supposed to be filling in the gap for you. It's supposed to kind of bring more origins to who the Doom Slayer is.
Okay. See, when I started the game, I immediately just got this sense of, like, oh, I guess I'm supposed to know things, but it didn't detract from the experience, but, you know, okay, so that does explain a lot. Interesting. Okay.
But that's, like, that was a nice thing, though. When you go to hell, though, you kind of get that backstory filled in.
Yeah. And I like how you succinctly described it as the audio logs, you know, that Satan just leaves scattered around hell.
Yeah, yeah.
People might need to know things.
Just in case they have visitors.
Mm-hmm. All right, so this was published by Bethesda, but more importantly, it was developed by id Software, who, jumping back to a point you made earlier, id Software developed Wolfenstein and the original Doom. You know, a fun fact I found out about id Software in doing some research for this episode?
They made Rage?
Well, not just that, but...
So,
the way id Software kind of sort of got its start is they were a team of young kids who were starting as game developers, and they, in 1990 or 1991, I forget which year, they successfully ported Super Mario Bros. 3 to the PC, and then they sent it to Nintendo to be like, look what we did. Would you be interested in, like, working with us, maybe licensing this, da da da? And Nintendo was just like, hey, good job. We don't want to do any work with you, but, like, that's pretty impressive. Good for you. And that interaction with Nintendo gave them the inspiration to go on and like okay, we got it, we can make it as developers, and that's what led to Wolfenstein.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Now let's talk about Doom 2016, though, or as some people might call it, Doom 4.
Okay.
Have you ever seen the Doom 4 footage from QuakeCon back in 2007?
No, no. Should I watch? Should I watch it?
Well, it's crazy to look at it because it's the game was canceled because the reception from it was terrible. So about 6 years later, Tom Willits at QuakeCon was quoted saying, "Every game has a soul. Every game has a spirit. And when you played Rage, you got the spirit. And Doom 4 did not have the spirit. It did not have the soul, and it didn't have a personality." So that just kind of says what Doom 4 was on the road to being. And I'm glad that they stopped to produce what they just did.
Okay, very interesting. And plus, if you consider how much personality, how much in your face and just like over the top personality this game has, I guess it is, yeah, an absolute good thing that Doom 4 never happened.
Yeah, it was crazy though. Like the trailer's still out. You can find it on YouTube and stuff like that. But just seeing what that was and then 9 years later seeing what Doom 2016 turned into, it's like unbelievable.
Okay, so it kind of was in quote unquote development hell for a couple years, is what you're saying?
Yeah, I would say that it was really rough. And after Doom 3, I mean, we didn't see or hear anything of Doom forever, and it was like a breath of fresh air when we finally got that trailer to Doom 2016.
Okay, nice. All right, well, now that we have it, now that we've covered its history, let's get into Doom itself.
The game starts off with bright lights, and it looks like your character is being strapped to a table. And you see these creatures kind of all over the place coming close to you. And you break out of your chains and decide to start smashing things' heads. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, this is pretty badass. This is pretty cool. And you shoot a couple things, and then you watch like this hologram of these people like worshiping your tomb or something that you were into.
You were in a sarcophagus, like a mummy, basically.
Yeah. And you go into the next room and you see your suit there. And you grab it, you grab your suit, you have like a vision, a weird thing, and you put your helmet on, and like I've never felt more like pumped up and more badass in a game than I did during this like first minute and a half of a game like ever.
Mm-hmm.
Like I'd say the closest I got to this feeling was at the beginning of Arkham City.
Okay. Where you, when you're as Bruce, you go and you get your stuff and put it on.
Yeah. Where you're just like suiting up and you're feeling like Batman at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Where this, though, the music's hitting the right notes. You put your helmet on and you're like, everything's going good. And then Samuel Hayden starts talking to you on the headset, and he's talking about like how he can use your help, and you grab the computer monitor and you just throw it. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, this first minute and a half for me, really, as I played the game, it just made me realize, oh, this character just doesn't give a fuck. And if you want to boop that, that's fine.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
he breaks everything, he doesn't listen to anyone, and it's all summed up in this first minute and a half.
Yeah, you're going down the hallway and you're killing some things, and at the end you grab the shotgun and you're blasting stuff, and mm-hmm. it's showing you, and you can get this little room there. You get into the elevator, and then he's talking about, Samuel Hayden's talking about like they needed to do this. They were trying to get the energy, and like it's all worth it and stuff. So you know, like he's kind of the bad guy and he's kind of the reason behind all of this,
mm-hmm.
but he's not. He's trying to also stop it. And he looks at the dead body and he looks back up and he punches the screen, and it goes to the theme song of this game, which is probably one of the most badass theme songs I've ever heard in a game at all. And the best thing about it is it's the theme of the first level of the first Doom.
Nice, nice.
Just in like an extreme heavy metal version of it. And it's just so awesome. And then when it comes back, the music's still going, and it ends with him cocking the shotgun to the perfect tempo of the song. I'm like, I'm in. I'm sold. That's it. I could be done with the game right now, and I'd be the 10 out of 10.
$60 well spent. Yeah, so this intro area is quite something. It's got a great sense of momentum that pushes you through it. And it's a really well-designed tutorial for the game itself. You know, you're put into kind of hallways one at a time where they go over specific functions, and then they let you loose in this big, wide kind of arena-like room. It's not really an arena, but it's an open room with, like, obstacles and crates to climb on, and you have to destroy one of these enemy spawn points called a gore nest, and doing that brings in a wave of enemies. You beat them, you learn how to, like, climb on surfaces, you learn how to balance your health and your ammo, and by the time you're done with that, like you said, when you get into the elevator for that cherry on top of the opening sequence, you kind of know everything you need to know about Doom to play Doom.
Yeah. So the plot wise there, it's pretty vague, and there's not much to it there, but when it is, like, it's just enough to keep you invested in little story pieces that guide you through.
You know what? I thought about the narrative of this game, and I don't know if you'll agree, but, and I mean this in a good way, I got mad Bioshock vibes off of this game, where you're this silent dude who wanders into this facility in a otherworldly like place, and the entire game you're being talked to on the radio by somebody who's trying to get you to help them in their scheme to produce an energy source that will be of great benefit to certain humans. You know, in the Bioshock games it's the Atom, and in this it's literally pulling energy out of hell. So
yeah.
Very similar vibes.
Now, when you're playing through, Tom, were you, like, very cautious with the way that you were playing, or were you more run and gun?
Well, it's something. Well, so I started cautious because that's just how I kind of am conditioned with most modern first person shooters. You know, looking for cover, counting ammo, being wary with my guns that I'm carrying. But then, you know, as you play it, you start realizing that Doom doesn't actually play by any of those rules or care about them. The combat areas are big and wide because they, you know, it gives you the freedom to run around. There's no iron sights on the aiming. You know, you just have your cursor in the general area and you fire as much as you want. And overall, it encourages you to kind of run and gun and barrel ass and just take the most aggressive approach to it. You know, in the level design, in the combat design, there's no, like, rationing weapon types because you have a weapon wheel. And this is what I love. From an early age, I was kind of tired of games that was like, you can only have, like, two guns at a time, because that's real. That's how it is in the real world. I think the first time I noticed that was in the first Gears of War. It's like, only an assault rifle and something else, because...
The first Halo was like that, too.
Yeah? Okay, so... Yeah. But yeah, I yearned for the days where it was just like, can I just pretend I have a magical backpack that lets me hold, like, seven guns, and Doom takes you right back to it. You got a little weapon wheel that cycles between, I think there's about 9 main weapons and a chainsaw, mm-hmm. and it doesn't care about logic. It's just like, have fun with all this mayhem.
I like how you say 9 main weapons and a chainsaw. Like, the chainsaw is a main weapon.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing.
Like, no, yeah. No, I'm not. Yeah. But it's like such a core piece to the strategy on how to play the game,
mm-hmm.
too.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Where using the chainsaw gets you more ammunition, while using your glory kills actually gets you more health.
Yes.
So, like, you got to realize how much you have of each thing so you know what you should be using. Or, hey, I got 4 tanks left. Well, I know this demon here is probably going to be coming around, so I have to save it to be able to use on that one so I can quick one kill that thing, and so on and so on. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot of strategy behind something that is so fast-paced. And that's the thing. When I played it, like, Doom is just a run and gun. Like, it's the perfect style of run and gun, though. Like, you take everything in, and you are aware of where everything's at all times. And you don't really get too lost in the way that the level designs are in the game.
I have to ask you, can we please talk about what you mentioned, the glory kills?
Oh my god. Because, I mean, which one do you want to talk about? There's like 400 of them in the game.
Well, as a mechanic, because this was the most surprising and just incredible thing about this game. So, do you want to break down glory kills for the audience real quick?
Yes. Yeah, so, if you do enough damage on an enemy, the enemy will start to glow in like an orange and blue hue around them. Mm-hmm. You can walk up and you can hit your melee button, and they'll perform some sort of a final death animation to that particular person. But depending on where you use it at, you get different animations.
Yes.
So if you select the head, you might have a different one than if you select the leg. But if you select the back of that same leg, you're going to get a different animation to that. Like, there's so many different ones. And when I was just playing through again on my playthrough for the episode, I was discovering more that I've never seen before. There was one where I was destroying one of the imps when they were shooting the fireballs at me. I ran up to him and did it. He tripped him on the ground, put his head up against the wall, and kicked his head into the wall and smashed it. I was like, I've never seen that one before, and I've been playing this game for 4 years now.
Yeah, what you said about it's different is what really impressed me with it, because when I first started, I kind of assumed, oh, this will probably be something generic that I will run out of times to be impressed by it. Like in Bioshock Infinite, when you melee kill people with the Skyway ring that you have, you
same know, animation over and over again.
Yeah, it gets really old at points. But yeah, depending on which way the enemy is facing or leaning or anything, it can trigger so many different options. A couple of my favorites were certain types of enemies, you can tear off their arms and then bash them in the face with their own arms.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, I jumped down from a ledge and performed the glory kill button move. And when I did that, he landed, kicked in the back of an enemy's knee, and then when they fell to their knees, he grabbed their head and snapped their neck. And I literally went like, oh! It was...
I love when you have the big fat guys and you punch them in the stomach and rip out their heart and put it in their face. Mm-hmm. Like,
and the final glory kill of the game as well.
Oh my god.
I won't spoil it, but it is so satisfying.
The whole last level, the whole last boss fight is such a good callback to the original series.
Okay.
Because like that character, you've seen them a bunch in like Doom 2 and parts of Doom 1, they were in it. But the fact that you didn't see them through this entire game, and then it was like, oh my god, like when it started to happen, like there it is, finally. But yeah, the way that you, the final glory kill is just one of the most like satisfying ones, I would say, that is in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I wish I could do that over and over again, though.
Yes. And then, just as a final little tidbit on glory killing, I think tying it into health refills was just brilliant. Like Josh mentioned before, if you successfully glory kill somebody, they'll drop little health refills. And I like it because it kind of puts you into a strategic mindset of, you know, using it as an alternative to guns whenever possible, because you know you're going to get a positive benefit. Like, there were points where if I saw enough enemies that I knew I could just take out with melees, I would do that to conserve ammo and then walk out of the room with fully refilled health. So
Right. It's
a great mechanic, and it's a satisfying mechanic. So all around, very, very impressed with it.
Yep. So the game's story really focuses on Samuel Hayden and Olivia Pierce, who are kind of trying to use Hell's resources to, you know, pretty much power their, I guess, what, guns, energy. Like, they're trying to use it to survive on Mars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, basically, there's a mining colony on Mars because this company, UAC, found a portal to Hell. And Samuel Hayden's the greedy guy who's like, I'm doing this for the good of mankind, but really, it's just because I'm greedy. And Olivia Pierce, I guess, she saw the flaws and the problems with this, but instead of trying to, Olivia Pierce, from as much as I gathered, was she saw the flaws in all this, you know, like how, oh, digging to Hell might not be a good thing. But instead of like wanting to like stop it, she instead like made a pact with the demons of Hell to be like, hey, I'm going to just help you guys.
Give me your energy. Yeah.
Not a great plan, and it backfires on her spectacularly.
But what I love is both of their ideas of what they wanted to do both resulted in not waking you up.
Right. Because, like, you were the variable that they knew neither of them could control.
Right. And I love, like, I love the levels where you end up going to hell. And, like we were saying, listening to the demons, like, logs and stuff like that, where they are afraid of you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how many games do you play where the villains are, like, terrified of you? Like, are you technically the bad guy then? Like,
interesting.
But I don't care. You're pretty much the demon slayer, and, like, oh, it's so...
You're basically an interdimensional hopping John Wick, where everybody, you know, your reputation precedes you, and everyone knows that you'll ruin anyone's plans. So you better not get involved.
Everyone keeps asking if I'm back, and in 2016, yeah, I'm back.
Oh, man. That's actually great. Keanu Reeves for Doom Guy the next time they make a Doom movie.
So while you're playing through all the levels in the game, did you ever find yourself kind of getting bored, or did you find yourself kind of, you know, finding the gameplay a little stale at all, or did it keep you invested the entire time?
My one critique of this game is that certain levels have a design that's a little too labyrinth-like. And I mean, I'm not saying I got extensively lost. For example, in the foundry,
mm-hmm.
when you have to go around disabling the enemy gore nests to stop the meltdown, there were points in between each nest where I would get lost. And yeah, there's a little cursor marker at the top of the screen, but it's just designed so... It's like an example of, like, extra design where... I was, like, running from an enemy to go find health, and I turned, and I found myself, like, running down a hallway that led to a series of hallways that where I was like, and then after I survived, I had to spend, like, an extra 5-10 minutes being like, where did I even turn? And, like, climb my way back out. And another thing, just this only specifically happened to me in the foundry, but I found its checkpoint respawns to be kind of bad in that, like, if I died... there was a section of the foundry where you're fighting on platforms above a pit of lava, and you can fall into the lava. And when I respawned, it would send me to a checkpoint like halfway across the foundry, and I have to like really walk a long way back. And I was like a little annoyed by like the third time I died because it's a tough section.
Now let me put a pin in that really quick.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Did you watch the animation from when you fell in the lava?
Well, yeah, you're like you catch on fire and like he held his arms up and he's like, and he's like, all the death animations are great. I just will say that.
Oh, you didn't get the good one.
I guess. Oh, are you saying there's a T2 reference?
There is a T2 reference. If you fall into the lava, usually like one of the first times you do it, as he's falling down, he puts his
never happened.
Thumb up
yeah, I never got that. Goes in. Oh, yeah. That's a bummer. I'll go throw myself into lava some more until I get it.
Yeah, honestly, like it is a great little reference. Just play that level because once you beat the game, you get level select.
That's true. I'll have to go back. So yeah, that's the only time in the game where I struggled with the level layout. And otherwise, I felt it was pretty well designed and organized in a decent way. Just the foundry I had a problem with. What about you? What's your impressions on this playthrough?
The foundry was a little bit tiring for me, but one thing I did like about it was the closest level that felt like an original Doom map. So the levels in Doom were very puzzle driven, where it was go, you got to find this key. Where's this key at? It's hidden somewhere. You got to find that key. You got to go back, open this door up. It's going to get you to this room here and so on and so on,
uh-huh.
Which was great because it added more, you know, back in the day, you didn't really have much to work with. So building puzzles and building, you know, game mechanics around trying to figure out how you're going to get that puzzle how you're going to get that key that sits up top there. And the cool thing about the original Dooms, Tom, that I didn't even mention to you didn't have a jump button.
Oh, okay.
And you didn't have the ability to look up or down. So it was just straight. Like, so if you like saw an enemy up in the, like up on a platform and like you look towards them, it would treat it like you were shooting them up there. But okay. It's one of those things. I mean, we didn't really get that six-axis, you know, first-person shooter mechanics until, like, Perfect Dark.
Okay. So okay.
Or like Rainbow Six, but
that's really interesting to hear. Speaking of jumping, can I just say something real quick? Can I throw out a take?
Sure.
Is there, across all video games, whenever you get an upgrade, is there any upgrade that is more satisfying than double jump?
No. When we were playing Jedi Fallen Order, mm-hmm. I was patiently waiting for double jump in that game.
It made me really think about it. It made me think back to like Metroid Prime, Jedi Fallen Order. But there's just so many games where you spend a long time with just a single jump and like you get really like, oh, I just wish I had another. And then when you get it, I imagine it's what heroin feels like. It's like, oh, I could jump higher. Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Give me that extra bounce.
Ooh, it was so great. I legit was in heaven as soon as I could double jump in this game. Especially, well, they introduced it right at the beginning of the tower climb level, which was very fun.
Right. So, and I will say the tower climb, that one I felt went on a little longer than needed.
Okay. I could see that, yeah.
When you're going up the elevators and you have to wait for the passing mechanics to go through in the kind of the corridor things or whatever, like that level went on a little bit too long. But I think everything else, though, was so just fluent.
Right.
And that's one thing I liked about it. No level overstayed its welcome. Every level kept going and going. And you knew you were going in the right direction if you saw something that you didn't kill.
That's true. That's actually a really good point. And like what plays into that too is the way the music design happens in this game is great, because you're walking around and it's pretty much just like the sounds of the environment if you're not mm-hmm. in combat. And then once you're in combat, that metal soundtrack kicks in and it starts kind of quiet and picks up the more and more you're surrounded by enemies, and then it dims down the more progress you make. But it won't stop until you've cleared every single one. And it's a nice little indicator. It's like, it goes like, all the enemies. Hey, maybe there's one left. Look around, you know?
But I like when it's playing, it's like, and then you get to the last one. Like, it like just perfectly ends like the end of a song. And I'm like, okay, I'm done. Like,
so good.
Like, and when you're done with it every time, and like that last note hits and you're like, You know that you're done. You don't need to kill anything else. And it's like also like a sigh of relief because of how much that was just going on in that previous moment. And I think when it came to it, like the level that like I felt overwhelmed in with enemies was towards the end. I think it was the last level or the second to last level, when you're on the train and it's going through like the train tracks and it gets sectioned off into that one where you're fighting above the train and then you go down and the train tracks are on the bottom there.
Yeah.
Like I felt that was the only one I ever felt like super overwhelmed in. And I was like, oh no, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this. And like, because they just throw everything at you at that moment.
Oh, but it's worth to talk about overwhelmed. The Hell Guards, when you're fighting to get the Keyblade in Hell, yeah. I almost wanted to quit. I'm not going to lie. I was like,
when you have to fight the two of them?
Just that entire gauntlet, you know, for the Crucible. I felt so overwhelmed in that particular section of the game. Just ridiculous. Like, in a good way. Like, when you do it, you feel satisfied, but
I would say, when you're done with it, though, like I said, yeah, everything. At the end of every big boss fighter or anything, it's just so satisfying. Mm-hmm. You have characters like Matt Hazard. You have characters like Duke Nukem. You have all these characters that think that they're badass, right? I think the Doomslayer in this is the most badass person without having to say a single word.
Mm-hmm. I could see that. Yeah.
You feel the weight behind all the punches that he throws. You feel the movement. Like, I just, this game makes you feel unstoppable.
There's only one mark I will put against the Doomslayer, and that he is rude to robots. There are these little robots that have the weapon upgrades attached to them, and after you purchase them, instead of waiting for the robot to dispense it and give it to you, he punches the robot and then just takes it, and then the robot looks sad afterward.
He probably does it because they look like pit droids.
Well, you know, pit droids have feelings too.
Yeah, it's the collectibles. You got the gun upgrades. You got the suits that you can get to upgrade your stuff, which the first thing I knew was to collect all the upgrades for the map so I can find all the collectibles so I can upgrade my weapons then to make them indestructible.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty funny that, like, there is an ability thing that you can pump into to make everything pop up on the map right away. So if you spend your resources correctly right off the bat, you'll find everything right away, which is pretty interesting.
Then you get the two best collectibles I've seen in games in recent memory. Hmm. And that's the little Funko Pops of the Doomslayer.
Oh, okay.
And then my personal favorite is the hidden switches that are in every level.
I didn't find all of them. I think I found like maybe only the first two because they were a little easier, but
yeah. The hidden switches in each of the levels unlocks original classic levels of Doom. But the cool thing about it is the levels are in the 16-bit era, but mm-hmm. the enemies and you are still in the Doom 2016, like, artwork.
It's a really fun mix of both, yeah.
But once you unlock those, you can go back and you can play that entire level then from the main screen. The original classic Doom level, the way that it is, like with you as Doom 2016 and the level as like 1993.
I think I need to go back and find them all in every level in order. I want like a little bit of the completionist vibe of it, you know.
Mm-hmm. So the one nice thing about this game was that it has replayability to it, where you can go back and you can, you know, oh, I got double jump. Now I can go and maybe do this level or see this cliff here or do this. Or now I have more of the map unlocked, or I have this ability that I can go and find these things, or I'm understanding how to read the map. Because at first it took me forever to understand how to read that map. It was very similar to like Jedi Fallen Order, where like, I don't understand how to do this. And then by the time I was done, I was like, okay, I know where everything on this map is. But I found myself constantly going back and replaying all those levels just to get everything, see everything, and do everything, because there is so much in this game. And I really, like, I think it was the best game of 2016.
I think it was a crazy and frantic first-person shooter that I love the energy. My palms were sweating during several points. It's a game that just really encourages you to rethink how you play these games, to move faster, shoot harder. I liked it a lot. I had a lot of fun with it. And so, real quick, without spoiling it, there is a bit of a cliffhanger ending. And I just wanted to ask, with your expertise, is that going to directly tie into Doom Eternal?
So, I saw the opening to Doom Eternal, and I don't think it is.
Okay.
But it might. Like, we don't really know fully without actually playing the game.
All right. Well, I'm going to be there on day one for Doom Eternal because I'm very excited for it. Although I might have trouble balancing it against Animal Crossing New Horizons, you know, two iconic games being released on the same day. I mean, how am I supposed to make time for both?
So we talked about the weapons in the game. What is your favorite weapon to use?
Oh, the Super Shotgun. Come on. The second I got that, I pumped all the upgrades into it and I never looked back.
I use the Super Shotgun a lot. I also used, I can't remember the name of the damn gun. It was the laser gun, pretty much.
The one with the blue laser?
Yeah.
I think it's called the Gust Cannon or something, but
yeah, that's it.
How am I supposed to have used that? Because, like, I felt like I would hold down R, and it would just shoot out one blast of energy at a time, and I'm like, oh, I wish this, like, chained together or something. Like, was I doing that wrong?
No, you're doing it right, but you want to upgrade it because, like, it'll take out, like, the Hell Barons in, like, one or two shots then. Because you can have one where like it holds you still and you're like planted into the ground and it does an even bigger blast.
Oh.
Or sometimes it'll blast through one enemy and hit two more behind it too. Like, yeah, that's really good. But yeah, the Super Shotgun is like the best. Yeah, and that came from Doom 2. And in Doom 2, it was like super OP like it is in this one too. That's why I absolutely love it. So going back to what you were saying about Doom Eternal and being there on day one, I remember that when Doom came out, I got this pretty much day one.
Okay.
It was probably 2 days after, because I remember my wife, girlfriend at the time, actually fiance at the time, if I'm not mistaken, by the time that this was released.
That lines up. Yeah.
Yeah. Got it for me on her birthday.
Aw.
So, but it was a great present that she got me for her birthday. But yeah, this game's just too good. It is just, I love it. I love everything about it. And like I said, after playing this, I was like, I gotta go back and replay the originals. And I absolutely love the originals. If you got a Switch, pick them up. They're $5 each, and you get free DLC for them, which is the extra levels that they imported in. And if you get Doom 2, you get Final Doom with that as well, which was a PlayStation 1 version of Doom. So, like, it's awesome.
Well,
I recommend it.
Hey, I might very well go and do that because this kind of opened my eyes to how cool the Doom franchise could be. And I'm looking forward to seeing the future of it.
Absolutely. Any closing statements, Tom? Overall, would you recommend?
Strong recommendation if you're looking for something that's very fast-paced and fun and that will, you know, do things that work outside the box of how most shooters work nowadays, Doom is going to be the game for you.
Well, that's all the time that we can spend in the past, so thanks for listening. Subscribe to A Cast of the Past on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And stay up to date with A Cast of the Past by making sure you follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. There you can be the first to know when new episodes drop, as well as joining in on discussions on all things gaming. And until next time, we'll see you in the future.